Good afternoon, folks, and welcome. It's time to break free. I will be your host for the hour, David Matthew Rock, coming to you live from the constitutional carry state of Arizona via the Patriot broadcast from the trenches, 89.5 FM, Chiloquin, the state of Jefferson. Simulcast on IndianaFreedomTalkRadio.com, the Grow Your Own channel, 107.5 FM, Greenville, South Carolina, Jalapenos channel, 87.9 FM, Sioux Falls, South Dakota, and many more micro-broadcasts and webcasts from around the world. Take the time to check out the number one source for Patriot news on the web at FromTheTrenchesWorldReport.com. If you'd like to contact me via email, I can be reached at DavidMatthewRock@gmail.com. This is a live call-in program. Come on up and share your thoughts and experiences. Unlike the mainstream media, listener participation is appreciated. The call-in number is 641-715-3610. Once connected, you'll be asked for the conference room number, which is 220029 in the pound sign. Hit star 6 to unmute. All right, it is currently 1:04 p.m. Arizona Mountain Time. It is 95 degrees in Casa Grande, Arizona, sunny with 42% humidity. Today we're going to look at a practical solution, one that has been right under our noses for over a century, a solution that will actually provide jobs, jobs, jobs. We will get into it as soon as we return from these messages from our sponsors. And since the day I left Milwaukee, Lynchburg, and Bordeaux, France, been making the bars lots of big money, helping white people dance. Got you in trouble in high school, but college now, that was a ball. You had some of the best times you'll never remember with me. Alcohol.
You've heard the phrase, you are what you eat? Not true. Actually, you are what you can absorb. So if the vitamins and supplements you now take are not being absorbed, what good are they? Introducing Protovite, a proprietary liquid system that allows premium quality nutrients to positively affect the blood in an astonishing 5 minutes. Watch our amazing 2-minute live blood cell video at TrueNutritionNow.com. That's TrueNutritionNow.com. Then call 520-829-1133. Protovite is nutrition you can feel. Protovite is nutrition that gets in.
If you had purchased $100 of Bitcoin in 2010, today you'd have $2,600,000. While that sinks in, you now have a huge cryptocurrency opportunity trading at a guaranteed 10 cents per coin. Procoin, a coin publicly traded on the open market, easily converted to cash, available in 60 countries, and Procoin is the only cryptocurrency offering coin-back rewards for consumers and merchants. Take action by July 31st at ProCoinCurrency.net. That's ProCoinCurrency.net. Deadline for 10 cent guarantee is July 31st.
Hey, old Dr. Bones here. Are you prepared to deal with medical issues in a disastrous situation? What would you do if medical help was not on the way? The Doom and Bloom Survival Medicine Handbook is over 400 pages of how-to advice written in plain English. You'll learn to handle all the likely medical issues you'll encounter in times of trouble. And it's not just the conventional medical wisdom. We talk about alternatives like essential oils, medicinal herbs, and other home remedies. Make the Doom and Bloom Survival Medicine Handbook a part of your survival library. And don't forget, Nurse Amy and I have medical kits, suture materials, instructional DVDs, and other items that'll help you keep it together even if things fall apart. Check them out, as well as 200 articles on medical preparedness, survival gardening, and other alternative remedies on our website at www.doomandbloom.net. Never think doom and gloom, think doom and bloom.
Divergent Flavor Labs introduces our all-original e-juice flavor line made from pure 100% kosher USP food-grade ingredients. Whether it's our flavored tobaccos like Calypso or our amazing bakery flavors like Creme de Liumptious, Divergent Flavor Labs handmade all-original flavor line will never disappoint. Available exclusively through VaporsRebellion.com.
Thank you for listening to PBFTT.
Patriot Broadcast from the Trenches. 89.5
Micro FM.
Chiloquin, the state of Jefferson.
All right, folks. I got a clip lined up from a gentleman named David Bloom. He is the author of Alcohol Can Be a Gas. Now, he grew up in San Francisco. He was a professor. He's definitely left-leaning. But let's not throw the baby out with the bathwater. Let's get right into it.
Well, alcohol is made from solar energy. It's not limited the way oil is. Oil, hey, it was made once. There's only so much in the ground. And once it starts getting less and less, it becomes more and more valuable. Shortages, again, in permaculture parlance. So when we're talking about solar energy, well, you know, it's going to be with us for 4.5 billion years. And when the sun burns out, well, we have problems then. But until then, we've got a pretty darn good source of energy. Now, why do I call alcohol solar energy? It's pretty much simple. Solar energy is used by plants to glue together carbon dioxide and water. Plants make carbohydrates, carbon dioxide, hydrate, water, and the solar energy glues that together. So what are carbohydrates? Well, sugars, starches, and plant fiber. None of those components come from the soil. They come from the atmosphere, and they come from the sun. So there's really no limit to how much of that stuff we can produce over time. Can we produce enough? We can produce many times what humanity needs in terms of all energy we use if we want to produce alcohol from designed crops. And I'm not talking genetically designed crops. I'm just talking about chosen crops that we can produce for energy and food. And we can do it for $40 a barrel, day in, day out, decades on decades to come. And if you can buy a fuel for $40 a barrel, why would you buy one for $150 a barrel, which is what we're looking at from the alternatives that the oil companies want to bring us.
Okay, folks, this was produced, I believe, in 2009, so that's obviously not accurate. Now we're seeing lower prices on the market.
Companies want to bring us. Many of us know the story of Prohibition. Prohibition, a very curious thing, where in a country where women did not have the vote, and an all-male Congress, with the exception of one woman from Wyoming, voted to ban the making of alcohol. But curiously enough, it was only after Rockefeller gave the Women's Christian Temperance Movement $4 million to go and buy Congress to vote for this improbable bill and crushed alcohol as an alternative fuel in this country, and of course had nothing, no effect on people's drinking. There's a long history of deception of the public and duping of the public, and food versus fuel, which is the question you asked, is the most recent version. So the proposition is, if you take the corn that people would eat and make it into alcohol, you've destroyed it, and now people can't eat it. That's preying on our ignorance of agriculture in the United States, because 90% of the corn that we grow in the United States is fed to cattle, not even fed to people. Of what remains, over 5% is made into high fructose corn syrup, which I would argue is not food. 3% is made into modified food starch, which is, you know, what stiffened up this shirt at the laundry, or they also make gunpowder with it, and they put it into salsas that are from New York City and not from the Southwest to thicken things up, right? And so it's an industrial product also. There is one other thing there's two things that we use for food from corn. One is breakfast cereal and corn chips. That's 1% of the total corn that we grow. And 1% of the corn we grow, we make into whiskey, which I always do argue is food. But other than that, really everything we grow in the United States is fed to animals. Now, some of you out there might not be vegetarians, and you'd say, meat is food, so that's valid. But it takes 10 pounds of corn to make 1 pound of cow. Well, if you took that 10 pounds of corn and sent that to Africa instead of feeding it to the cow, you'd keep those 10 people alive for a day instead of feeding one cow, which makes 9/10 of it into manure. Why are cows so wasteful? Well, in permaculture, we always look to where something began and when something began. And so in the case of cows, they came from the forests of southern Europe and northern Africa. Forests in northern Africa, get that as a concept, where we have the Sahara Desert now. And they ate woody brush. Cattle aren't even adapted, actually, to eat grass. So here we are feeding them corn, the seeds of grass, and guess what? They can't get food value out of the starch. It goes through undigested. But starch, wow, that's what we're making alcohol from. So if we make the alcohol first and take the starch out of the corn, which is right now a surplus going to waste in feedlots, and then feed what's left over from making alcohol to the cows, guess what? They actually gain more weight than if they would have eaten the original corn because the starch inhibits their absorption of nutrients. And believe me, farmers would love to do something different because being the vassals of Cargill or ConAgra is not a good life. And so saying, well, sure, I can't really risk putting my whole 500 acres into, you know, sorghum, but can I put 100 in and bring you the sorghum for your alcohol production? Absolutely. Next year you can do 200 and 300. And so what that does is it creates a mosaic of crops in the Midwest instead of a biological desert of only two crops. And so what does that mean ecologically? It means pests go down. Because, you know, when a corn borer comes up out of the ground in the spring and goes, where's my corn? This is a beet. I don't eat beets. You know, you're talking about crop rotation reducing pest pressure. You're talking about not needing so much chemical fertilizer because you vary crops and they draw on different things. And the byproducts of the small alcohol plant go right back into the field to fertilize those crops. So without even using the O word, you'd be making a transition to organic farming in the Midwest just by doing it with plain old small-scale capitalism. In other words, provide a market for farmers to not have to grow corn and soybeans. That's the promise of what small-scale alcohol could provide. And what's the energy return on that? The energy return is enormous because when you put back the nutrients from the alcohol plant back into the soil, as the spent mash going back into the soil, you've eliminated all the fertilizer, which is made of fossil fuels. If you go ahead and have a mosaic of crops, you don't need hardly any pesticides. And so now, I mean, you know, it's just corn and soybean pests out there, and you've got beets. They don't eat those. So you're in this wonderful position where you don't need to buy Monsanto's, you know, Roundup or, you know, various other pesticides. And so now you don't use that oil product. You're not having to transport it so far to the ConAgra terminal 50, 100 miles away. You're making alcohol right there on the farm, and you can deliver it to a local strip mall with an above-ground station and just deliver it 5 miles, and people in your community can buy that fuel. You've wiped out all the middlemen, and now you're going right to retail. Everybody wishes there were magic bullets to solve all their problems. And pesticides have always been marketed as a silver bullet, but they've been at best kind of a rusty iron bullet, and in general they're kind of a dull bullet that doesn't kill things, and basically they're a bullet they can't even get out of the gun half the time. Why? Because nature is a lot smarter than Monsanto. If you have billions of bugs and they are thrown at whatever chemical you put in the field, some of them will survive. Some of them will have the right genetics where they go, wow, DDT, I love that stuff. I eat that for breakfast, you know. And so those are the bugs that survive. Well, they're the ones that are left to breed. And so all the bugs next year are from the parents of the ones that liked DDT. DDT killed all their competition. This is great. They could eat all the corn they wanted. So now, the following year when all the bugs come out, instead of 1% or 2% being resistant to DDT, 20% are, because that's what you selected for by killing all the others. And then by the third generation, it's 80%, and by the fourth generation, it's 100%, and now you have to switch pesticides. And that's been the treadmill farmers have been on ever since World War II, when we started using monstrous amounts of pesticides because we started growing too much of one crop at a time in one place. Places like Mexico, no farmer plants one variety of beans. They'll plant 40 variety of beans. And guess what? A bunch of those varieties of beans won't do well. But something always does well. This year's a drought. Well, the dry adapted one does well. This year's too wet. The one that likes water makes it. The dry one didn't make it. It doesn't matter, because when you plant the whole genetic palette of beans, something will work. And when you're depending on that for food, that's more important than getting the maximum yield per acre. But the average Mexican farmer farms permaculturally, and they actually make more money than the corporation in the United States that grows corn with the best of technology. Why? Because in the United States, we grow one crop at a time. In Mexico, no one would think of doing that. That would be a waste of space. So in Mexico, you grow corn, which is the low-cost commodity, but you also grow nice high-protein beans, which climb the corn. So you're using the services of the corn stalk as a scaffold for the beans to grow. The corn uses the ability of beans to trap nitrogen from the air and make fertilizer, and corn needs that nitrogen. And then underneath, in the shade, beneath those two crops, they grow squash. Now, if you add up the total dry weight pounds of food from the corn, from the beans, and the squash, you get at least 50% more food per acre than the best Iowa corn field with the best technology we can throw at it to grow corn, because each crop uses some more of the sunlight falling on that field instead of only using 30%, which is about the maximum any one crop can use. So we're using all the sunlight filtering through the canopy down to the squash, and all of those things are producing food. That's the way to get the highest amount of food per acre. People think that's what the Green Revolution promised, and it did not. What the Green Revolution promised is the greatest amount of food per acre, the greatest amount of food at the least amount of labor per acre. The idea was to do away with people. People are pesky. You know, if you have a bunch of farmers, they want things like schools and swimming pools and all that kind of infrastructure. If you don't need people because you have, you know, a machine that can plant 5,000 acres of corn and harvest 10,000 acres of corn and one guy can run it, well, you don't need to have taxes to go all to all this infrastructure. So you favor growing this incredibly inefficient crop and sell it for almost nothing because you can do it without labor. Remember, every product in the world is made from three things: energy, capital, and labor. So modern agriculture has adopted the industrial model where you maximize the benefit of capital, you know, million-dollar combines, instead of using labor, instead of using...
I want to point something out. The word economy means just that. It's just what he's explaining. The least amount of energy I put in and the maximum return. So when the mainstream media is discussing the economy, that's kind of what they're saying, because what we deal with on a day-to-day basis is the marketplace. And what these globalist type people, these industrialists, what they're talking about is economy. And we are a human resource, and there's a plethora. There's too many of us. So obviously that's why something like the Georgia Guidestones has been put in place to kind of rub it in your face. And doing a little bit of studies, you'll see that the plan is to just slowly reduce the human population, and they're hitting us from every angle. Anyway, let's continue.
Using labor instead of using people, and energy is what powers the whole thing. So nature has scales that work, and when it comes to energy, solar energy is the defining moment of scale. So with small-scale alcohol fuel, well, we're looking at, you know, much smaller units than these giant industrial plants that they put up in the Midwest to imitate oil refineries. Those 100-million-gallon plants take 45% of the crops from 50 miles in diameter around it. That's nuts. I'll tell you why. Because the corn can get into the plant, but once you mix it with water, make it into mash, ferment it, distill it, now you got all this soup left over. Where's that going to go? You can't dump it out the back door in the local creek. It's too much of a good thing. It's a surplus of nutrients. It's not bad. It's not good. But it's too much to put in a river. That would be pollution. When you put too much of a substance back in an ecosystem without something designed to eat it up, that's surplus, and that can also be pollution, waste, and extra work, which we're very allergic to in permaculture. So if we go ahead with a small-scale plant, we avoid the problems of the large-scale plant. What does the large-scale plant have to do? They have to pour in energy into that liquid to evaporate the water off so that it can be made into a syrup, which can be mixed with the dry grain that's left over and shipped somewhere. But if you're doing it on the small scale, and on, in other words, on the scale that makes sense, like the 500 or 1,000 acre or 2,000 acre, well, you're immediately adjacent to the land. So you could feed it to cows that live on that land, right? And they can poop out the surplus nutrients and fertilize the next crop you're going to grow on that land.
So in case you didn't catch what he was saying earlier, the cows are not able to absorb these carbohydrates. They live on cellulose, on fiber. They have enzymes in their stomach that can break the fiber back down into something that's nutritive to them. So when you make this alcohol, what's left over is something called a distiller's grain. And that distiller's grain is got all the minerals, it's got all the amino acids, it's got everything that cow needs. What's interesting about alcohol as a fuel is all of the physical elements are left behind in the distiller's grain, and then the hydrogen and the oxygen is all that's consumed. And you're not really consuming it. What you're doing is breaking it back apart. When you burn it, you break those elements back apart. So the only thing that is lost in the equation is the energy from the sun that the plant uses through photosynthesis to combine everything together. So it is quite literally liquid solar fuel. And unlike gasoline, it doesn't go bad. NASCAR uses it because it's safer. You can, when there's a spill on the track, you can put it out with water. Anyway, let's continue.
The mash, back on the land, kill the weeds, grow the crop, and not use fertilizer. But you don't have to pour in all this energy to make the liquid dry enough to move somewhere, because you can't ship water anywhere, really. So scale matters. Too big is not better. Smaller is better and more capitalistically cost-effective. And the jobs per gallon go way up the smaller the plant. And, you know, even David Pimentel agrees with me, that's a good thing. You know, more jobs is a good thing. We're also used to thinking of reduced labor to like the least amount. That's not the best way to run an economy. If you go to any Midwest community where there's an alcohol plant, the bars are open, which may or may not be a good thing. The barber shops are open. The restaurants are open. The kids have better clothes when they go to school. The schools are better funded from taxes. Why? Because that energy cost that would have otherwise gone to an oil company in an OPEC nation, that money now went through the alcohol plant and is circulating through all those salaries all through the community, and the community is prosperous. And guess what? It's like that everywhere in the world. If you go to Brazil, where there's an alcohol plant, the workers have 10 months of work a year cutting sugarcane around that plant, so they have a sustainable job that isn't a three-month seasonal farm work job, and everything is financially better for quite a wide radius around the plant because that money didn't leave the community for some transnational corporation's Geneva bank account. That is probably the most important thing for America to learn from alcohol fuel. The DOE did a great study on what would happen if we had small, medium, and large alcohol plants. Well, we built large ones, but when you put all of those together, it would mean that we'd have 26 million non-exportable jobs in the United States providing the fuel to run our economy for our cars, for our electricity, for everything. 26 million non-exportable fuel to run our jobs in the United States, the fuel to electricity to run our economy.
Looks like we're having some sort of error here. I paused it. I'm going to start it back up and see if we can get it going.
Non-economy for our electricity.
Okay, well, we're having an error. It's all good. He's pretty close to being at the end of it anyway. Is there anybody online that wants to make some comments real quick? All right. So,
yeah, I'd like to make a comment.
Go ahead, Flea.
Anyone there? Testing.
Yeah, go ahead. Can you hear me? Can you hear me, Flea?
Testing. Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah. One of the problems that could be, one of the solutions to this problem would be the legalization of industrial hemp.
I would agree. Continue.
And not only that, with one of these, learning and growing things in my greenhouse, one of the things that's been on the back of my mind is I'm going to get some Japanese kudzu seeds, and I'm going to plant them here on my acreage since all these cows come around and whatnot. And like a virus, I'm going to see like an experiment to see just how well they actually survive off of kudzu. Now, kudzu can actually last dormant in sub-zero temperatures for 3 years, their seeds, and then will still come back. Now, I understand that there's a lot of land down in the south that has kudzu. I look at it as a weed. But I almost guarantee that most of the land that they actually complain about, there aren't any cows grazing on them. There aren't any livestock.
Another thing that's interesting that I want to add to the whole alcohol as a fuel thing is they have isolated a termite enzyme. So the number one product that we produce in the United States is not corn. It's actually grass clippings, believe it or not. So when everybody goes out to mow the lawn, that's the number one product in the U.S. They've isolated the termite enzyme that can take the cellulose, the fiber of grass clippings, and turn it back into starch and sugar. So we could all be sending our bags of mowed grass to the distiller and having them turn it into fuel. So looks like we're ready to go to break, and here we go.
The phrase, you are what you eat? Not true. Actually, you are what you can absorb. So if the vitamins and supplements you now take are not being absorbed, what good are they? Introducing Protovite, a proprietary liquid system that allows premium quality nutrients to positively affect the blood in an astonishing 5 minutes. Watch our amazing 2-minute live blood cell video at TrueNutritionNow.com. That's TrueNutritionNow.com. Then call 520-829-1133. Protovite is nutrition you can feel. Protovite is nutrition that gets in.
If you had purchased $100 of Bitcoin in 2010, today you'd have $2,600,000. While that sinks in, you now have a huge cryptocurrency opportunity trading at a guaranteed 10 cents per coin. Procoin, a coin publicly traded on the open market, easily converted to cash, available in 60 countries, and Procoin is the only cryptocurrency offering coin-back rewards for consumers and merchants. Take action by July 31st at procoincurrency.net. That's procoincurrency.net. Deadline for 10 cent guarantee is July 31st.
Hey, old Dr. Bones here. Are you prepared to deal with medical issues in a disastrous situation? What would you do if medical help was not on the way? The Doom and Bloom Survival Medicine Handbook is over 400 pages of how-to advice written in plain English. You'll learn to handle all the likely medical issues you'll encounter in times of trouble. And it's not just the conventional medical wisdom. We talk about alternatives like essential oils, medicinal herbs, and other home remedies. Make the Doom and Bloom Survival Medicine Handbook a part of your survival library. And don't forget, Nurse Amy and I have medical kits, suture materials, instructional DVDs, and other items that'll help you keep it together even if things fall apart. Check them out, as well as 200 articles on medical preparedness, survival gardening, and other alternative remedies on our website at www.doomandbloom.net. Never think doom and gloom, think doom and bloom.
Divergent Flavor Labs introduces our all-original E-Juice flavor line made from pure 100% kosher USP food-grade ingredients. Whether it's our flavored tobaccos like Calypso or our amazing bakery flavors like Crumbiliumptious, Divergent Flavor Labs' handmade all-original flavor line will never disappoint. Available exclusively through VaporsRebellion.com.
Thank you for listening to PBFTT.
Patriot Broadcast from the Trenches, 89.5.
Micro FM.
Chiloquin,
the state of Jefferson. Jefferson.
Nothing your kids, 'cause we are.
Time to Break Free is a listener-sponsored broadcast. If you'd like to help keep this program on the air, go to FromTheTrenchesWorldReport.com and hit that donate button. Or you can mail donations to Henry Shively at Post Office Box 964, Chiloquin, Oregon, 97624. Your contributions are appreciated. Okay, I'm your host, David Matthew Rock. It's 1:36 p.m. Arizona Mountain Time. And that was Spanish Fly from Filthy Weasels. And maybe you recognize that voice. That's our very own Joe from the Carolinas. Joe hosts a show on one of our sister networks, LTR, about permaculture. Anyway, so I have a few more things on the agenda, but I want to give our callers a chance to come back up if they wanted to discuss anything else.
Yeah, David, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
David?
Yes, can you hear me? I can hear you just fine. Are you able to hear me?
Yes, I can hear you now. I just wanted to comment on your first piece there, man. Excellent subject matter. But, you know, at the beginning you said the guy seemed left-leaning. I don't agree. Everything I heard was pure logic. And, you know, we've been kind of coaxed into this false left-right paradigm, and capitalism is a good thing. Capitalism is usury, and that's not what we're supposed to have in these United States. It's supposed to be a free enterprise system. And with a free enterprise system, with an emphasis on, you know, efficiency, you know, like the guy was talking about growing the corn with the bean vines around him and doing things the best we could, we'd be living in heaven. And I just wanted to say, hey, man, you're doing great, and I'll back out.
Well, thank you, sir. If you were to go watch his full documentary, Alcohol Can Be a Gas, or a presentation on YouTube, you have more of an understanding of what I mean about him being a little bit left-leaning. He was a Carter supporter. So, I mean, yeah. Flea, did you have anything else you want to talk about? Okay, so
yeah,
go ahead.
Maximize efficiency with what we have. That's the only thing I can really say. I mean, just, you know, I've got corn growing, and I have beans and right next to them so that they can climb up the stalks. And I'm slowly learning here about growing food, even though, you know, I do enjoy that, you know, corn can make a lot of alcohol.
So one of the things I found interesting about Arizona is we got a type of tree called a mesquite tree. It's all throughout the South. Now, it is a legume tree. So what it does is it's a nitrogen fixer. Last year, I grew a small garden in the spring underneath that mesquite tree, and I even kind of collected up some of the beans and used them as mulch. And I had 10 times the production than I did this year. This year, I tried something different. The western sun is so evil here, it just cooks everything. And most of the plants that claim to need full sun only need about 6 hours of sun. So I decided this year to try planting on the eastern side of my home. So at about 1 to 2 p.m., you got full shade. And it did okay. But it didn't produce anything compared to what growing under that mesquite tree did. Now, this is something called permaculture, which is permanent agriculture. And the idea is stacking functions. When you look at how a forest is constructed, you have an overstory, an understory, then you have bushy layers, you have herbs, and you have tubers. There's even a vining layer. And something called emergence, those real tall, skinny palms that you see that kind of pop out and go up like 40 feet in the air. So when you stack all these different functions together, you can maximize the space and you can have multiple production coming just from this one area. So there's also a time. Go ahead.
In fact, the Indians used to survive off the beans and the legumes that actually grew on the mesquite trees.
Yeah, you can make flour out of them. I just made friends with somebody who has a lot of horses, and every time we take her horses for a walk, we got to like stop under the mesquite tree and let them eat some beans because they just love it. So so he was discussing alcohol as a fuel, and he was discussing corn, and corn is one of the worst plants that you can use for making alcohol. And the reason is the majority of the plant is fiber, cellulose. Only very little of it is actually sugar and starch. Beets, okay? One of the biggest being a fodder beet or a sugar beet or anything that produces, you know, a lot of starch and sugar, okay? There's very little plant matter above ground, and you get a huge store of starchy energy below ground. So corn is not even close to being the best product that we could use for producing alcohol. Another thing which I found drastically interesting is you can take the sewage from a major metropolitan area and run it down a series of canals to grow cattails. These cattails will clean the sewage to the point where it is clean water coming out of the other end of the canal. Now, the very base of the cattail, the little white part when you pull it out of the ground, per volume is 5 times starchier than a potato. So, but the reason you're not going to hear this stuff on the mainstream media is because it puts the money back in our hands, it gives us something to do, and it works with the current infrastructure. You could easily make a transition between fossil fuels and alcohol fuel. We already got the trucks. We already got the stations. It's not like trying to do some sort of hydrogen fuel cell or something like that. And if Tesla, I haven't seen Tesla technology demonstrated. So that's why I'm kind of like pointing this out. It may be true. I just haven't seen it working. So like another thing I'll bring up on top of that is hydroelectric power plants. When you hear these greeny weenies on the media talking about solar and wind and all these other things, the most effective method for producing electricity is hydroelectric. But they don't want to talk about it because if they have too much of anything, then the price goes down. And they don't want us having too much energy because we could just buy CNC machines and just start making stuff in our garages and selling it online. So they want control, they want to be the middleman, and they want to suck off our energy. Any thoughts?
Well, I've worked in the water reclamation industry and engineering, setting up their projects. Now, they've got all these distillery ponds where they let the sediment sit there and filter it. I mean, you can go and look on Google Earth and over in Henderson, southeast of Las Vegas. And the thing about it, though, is that while all of this waste is evaporating, it's giving off gas.
You know, they could sit there and capture this gas and recycle it and send it back to people to use for energy, but they're just not going to do it. I mean, you're correct.
I remember seeing this about a decade ago. People in India were taking all of the cow manure and they were putting it in a vat with a floating ceiling so they could keep adding the fluid and the ceiling would lift up, and it's kind of conical shaped. And it would collect all the gas, and they would use it to run a generator at night, and it was only enough to power a light bulb, or if you know the lights for the small community. But still, I might as well bring this up because this is something that's actually my dream. It's called an Earthship, okay? And insulation, okay? Energy moves best through a solid, then a liquid, then a gas. So when you put fiberglass insulation in your wall, you are creating little areas to trap gas between the fibers of the insulation. And the concept is that the energy does not move well through air, so you don't get the heat buildup, and that's how insulation works. Now, an Earthship is the 100%, 180 degrees in the opposite direction. If you've ever gone into a basement on a hot summer day and you feel an immediate 10 to 15 degree temperature drop, that's because the Earth's crust has an equilibrium temperature of 52 degrees. Depending on where you are, you dig down a certain amount and you get your thermometer out, and you're going to find that 52 degree temperature. So with an Earthship, you build it facing solar south. The south side of the home is fully glazed. And your eastern, northern, and western walls are built with tires. You pack them full of sand. You put chicken wire on them and stucco. That's the interior of your house. Then beyond this tire wall, you stack up 14 feet of earthen berm. So the concept is the summer sun, when it reaches its zenith, barely even peers into this house. Maybe a foot or two. And in that foot or two, you put a planter bed. But in the wintertime, with the low winter sun, it peers all the way into the house. So in the wintertime, the sun's energy gets absorbed into the walls and into the floor. You use dark colors to ensure that it gets warmed up. And at night, you pull the curtains across, and the solar energy that was gathered up into this thermal mass, this dense thermal mass, will come back out into the air once the air temperature drops. Now, the summer, the whole thing completely reverses. And in an area like I'm at, where it can get to 120 degrees, you have to put in a cooling tube. So you dig an 8-foot trench, or excuse me, an 8-foot deep trench. It's about 30 feet long, and you just put in a large pipe. And by putting a cupola or venting out of your roof, you get a natural convection of air that will give you nice, fresh, clean air. And by the time it gets into your home, it starts to temper down to a comfortable 76, 72. It all depends on the area that you're at. If you're near the equator, you don't even have to account for the sun at all. In fact, you can build the house pretty much as big as you want to. And if you're in somewhere like Canada or whatever, basically the colder it is, the less deep you can build the house, the closer you need to be to that southern glazed wall. Any thoughts?
Well, you're right. I mean, just with miners and whatnot that are going around here, the deeper they dig down, the hotter it gets. These guys are going down a mile, and it can be minus 17, and they're working down there, and it's still 90 degrees, and these guys are sweating their ass off.
Well, that's a little bit different concept. If you get low enough, you're going to get into that geothermal. So, all right, here's another interesting thing that I remember seeing this back in the 80s, and I believe it's in Nevada. I'm not sure if it's still being used, but they use solar tracking mirrors that would bounce the sun's rays onto a column made out of ceramic. It would heat the ceramic column, and it would magmatize salt. Turn it into, you know,
a ceramic column that's filled with salt.
Go ahead. One more time, Flea.
Filled with salt.
Yes. So, go ahead.
Salt.
Yes, it magmatizes. It turns into the lava, liquid molten lava. So what it does is it pumps this energy into the ground, this magmatized salt into the ground, and then it is used to run a steam turbine. So that solar technology can run 24/7. Okay, but here's something interesting about solar technology. California has a surplus of energy during the peak period of the day. Because they have much cooler temperatures than, say, here in Arizona, their ACs don't run to the same degree. Yet everybody has been putting up rooftop solar like it's going out of style. I remember reading an article about this, I believe 6 months ago. Places in California, electric companies in California are paying people to buy their energy, not charging them, paying them to buy their energy at these peak points during the day because they have a surplus. That might screw up the grid. I don't know why they're paying people to take the energy off the grid for them, but they do. Now, that whole thing flips in the evening and goes the other direction, where now you're paying, you know, XYZ per kilowatt hour if you want to buy electricity from California. I had another point and I just lost it. You got any thoughts, Flea?
Well, you know, the last engineering company I worked for actually set up one of the biggest solar plants on there on the border of Nevada. I guess they used to call it State Line, out there, where they actually have the moving solar panels and they actually focus on a big ball that heats up the salt, because the salt actually holds the energy and produces power, you know, even when it's dark.
So, yes, exactly. All right, I remembered the point that I wanted to make. They have electrical substations in every major metropolitan area for the peak power time of the day, you know, which is, I can't remember exactly, between 10 and 2 or something like that. It's when all the machines are running, everybody's AC is running, everybody's at work, everybody's consuming power. Now, these peak power plants are small. They're in almost like a neighborhood level, and they're spread throughout the community. And what they use usually is natural gas. So at that peak point during the day, these things fire up, and they start producing extra electricity to keep the grid going. But if we were using rooftop solar, that would be completely unnecessary. But I think a lot of this is – it's all about control. So when they have us on fossil fuels, it's because they – believe they have the mineral rights, we don't have the money to buy the equipment to drill, and they can create a monopoly. And they want to show artificial scarcity. I mean, that's why somebody like Al Gore, whose family is big coal, is the person that's coming out there telling you not to burn coal. So what happens when they put all these taxes and this regulation and all this stuff, what they eventually get to do is sell you less energy or less coal and charge you more for it. And that is the whole economy thing. And another way to look at the economy, and I think this is kind of important, is the spice trade with India. If I take my merchant ship to India and I buy a whole bunch of spices, the second time I go back there, those people in India are going to go, wait a second, maybe this stuff has value. Okay? Now, if I take a whole bunch of these spices back to Europe, maybe the second time I do it, everybody's going to say, well, you seem to have a whole bunch of this stuff, so maybe it's not worth that much. So when I go to India, if all I do is grab a little bit of these spices, people are going to go, well, you're only grabbing a little bit. It must not be worth very much. And if I take just a very little bit back to Europe, the Europeans are going to go, or I can influence the Europeans to believe that this product is rare, and now I get a super big price for it. So the word economy in and of itself, that's pretty much what's going on, and it is destroying our society. Any thoughts?
Yeah, it's about control. You know, I've already thought in my mind that a solution to actually solve this is to actually make a worldwide solar grid, so that when it's dark over here, the places that actually do have sunshine, they send their energy back over to this side, to the dark side. And when we actually collect energy, we send it back to the other countries that where it's nighttime. I mean, they said that they can actually line the Sahara Desert and provide more energy that we would ever need. But, you know, solar is not the, I mean, you can't sit there and bank on just solar. I mean, you need parallel systems. You need hydro, you know, you need wind. But, you know, as long as they control us and can screw us at the gas pump, this is about as good as it gets.
I agree. And another thing we have to understand is steam turbines. So say, for instance, we're producing alcohol, which is liquid solar fuel, and once burned, every component that was involved in the process of making it, like I said, is either left over as distiller's grain or it is released back into the environment when you burn it. So we could do a international solar grid, but we could also do permaculture farming, give everybody a lot of work, and then just run steam turbines. Now, if you combine that with hydroelectric and rooftop solar and the myriad of other technologies which are being suppressed or are coming online, there would be no energy shortage. There would be no food shortage. There would be no shortage of jobs. And all of this stuff completely works with the current infrastructure. We don't have to re-engineer anything. So, I mean, let's look at it this way. If I wanted to get this done, the first thing I would do is start building hydroelectric plants. And who would I get to do it? I would start bringing all our troops home and allow them to finish out their contracts. Instead of making them dogs of war, I'm going to put them to work building the next hydro plant. And if we got a river that's 100 miles long, I don't see why we can't dam it up 100 times if need be. You know, so we can. These are the types of things that we need to talk about. Back in 2014, I tend to monitor both the Fox Radio and then NPR. And in the very same week, I heard out of both these channels, boycotts do not work, and alcohol is inefficient, and it does not work as a gas or as a fuel for your vehicle. So when both mouthpieces on either side are telling me something like that, that's probably where our energy and our attention needs to go. So, go ahead.
What they're doing with nuclear energy, all they're doing is boiling water, right?
Exactly. And you, I have my next door neighbor used to work at a chemical disposal plant. And they would take toxic chemicals and go send it off to the plant to be burned to run the steam turbine for electricity. So we could green our world up. Go ahead.
That's all they're doing with coal. That's all they're doing with coal, too, is boiling the water.
And what is coal made from? It's a fossil fuel.
It's a fossil fuel.
Yeah, it's made from plants and animals, right? So it's made... It's made from solar energy, isn't it?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, the whole thing.
I just wanted to add real quick. We talked about corn earlier. I know it's, I'll go ahead and let you finish. It's too close to the top. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. I kind of lost my train of thought, so please just say your comment.
The corn thing, I drive 3,000 miles a week. I see all the corn all over the United States. They're not wasting any space with this corn growing thing. Let me tell you, man, they got every free inch of land that can possibly grow corn efficiently is being utilized just pretty much. I mean, the corn is grown so close together that it's almost, it's hard to grow. You were talking about growing other things along with the corn, inside the corn and around the corn. They're going to have to space that stuff out because it's grown so close together now so the combines can efficiently pick it that it's almost impossible to grow. They're going to have to re-space it all, and that's going to cause big mechanical combine problems and harvesting problems down the road if they want to grow anything else anywhere near it.
Yeah, I agree. But what we're talking about is small scale. You would literally have people in the fields tending to the crops like down in Mexico. So it would not be an industrial scale with this large machinery. All right, folks, that's it for me today. I appreciate all the calls. I had a couple other things I wanted to get into, but you know what? Maybe we'll just pick it up tomorrow. So y'all enjoy the rest of your day, and as soon as I find the song that I'm looking for, I'm out. Take care.